Focus with Owen Beattie. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Good afternoon. Welcome in to Kildare Focus. Hope we find you well on this Friday. Owen with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. And coming up on the programme between now and then, we'll be talking very shortly about the CCPC and the ASAI new guidance on social media advertising for influencers. We were talking a little bit earlier about this on the Kildare Today programme. Also, this weekend, there is going to be a moon eclipse. We'll be telling you more about that with David Moore from Astronomy Ireland. Dr. Cathal O'Connor will join us to discuss World Psoriasis Day, which takes place on Sunday. And Éireann Rud Éireann are appealing for safety, as 71 incidents at level crossings were recorded so far this year. Get in touch with us, as you heard there. You can text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. Send an email off to studio@kfmradio.com or call us on 045 898 999. That's all to come over the next hour or so here on KFM, but we're going to jump straight into it. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, the CCPC, and the Advertising Standards Authority for Ireland, the ASAI, have published fresh guidance for Irish influencers on the clear labelling of ads on social media. Well, to talk more about this, I'm joined by Gráinne Griffin, Director of Communications with the CCPC. Gráinne, good afternoon and good to talk to you.
Good afternoon.
So this is quite a comprehensive and accessible guidance. It addresses really the issue of paid promotion, items that are gifted by brands or PR agencies, and also the advertising of own brand products and services, particularly on social media.
That's right. We did research last year to see how well are consumers really able to spot or identify when they're being advertised to on social media by influencers. And what we found is that people aren't really very good at it. In fact, people think they're better at recognising advertising that they actually are than they actually are. And so as a result, to try and address that, we decided to bring out some really, really clear guidance for influencers on how to label their posts correctly, so that if a consumer is being advertised to online, they're able to just spot that instantly. Like, there's not a moment's doubt in their mind, really. They should just totally recognise when an influencer is being paid or receiving a benefit in some way to do a particular post.
Yeah, and I made the example earlier on the Kildare Today programme that if I was an influencer, right, in this land of the other world, that I was an influencer and I was eating a bar of chocolate on my social media account and I was like, this is my favourite bar of chocolate, I love this, I eat it every day, etc, etc, and I'm getting paid for that, I have to specify and clarify so that my followers know that this is not just a random post that I'm putting up, I'm being paid by that chocolate bar to say these things.
Totally, because they're two completely different things. Like, if you go and decide that I'm going to spend my own money on this product and I think it's a really good product and I want to tell my followers about it and I know they have a level of trust in me and potentially they're actually quite likely to maybe follow me and also buy this particular product because they know I've independently made this decision myself, that's one thing. But if they knew that you were getting paid to go and get that chocolate bar and then come back and to eat it and to promote it, like, people can distinguish between those two things. They're not the same. And so it's really, really important that as soon as a consumer looks at the post, it is completely transparent. They know that is instantly recognisable as an ad. You know, it's very prominently displayed. And it's just, it's honest. That's what people want to see here, is honest promotion on social media.
Yeah, tell us then about the guidance on hashtags, that they have to use the word hashtag ad, because I was also saying this earlier, sometimes you have to go searching for the hashtag to see whether it's a paid promotion or a sponsored post, because they will do the big highfalutin, oh, I love this product, etc, etc, and then, by the way, it's actually a sponsored ad, but they'll say it very quietly. So you want people to be able to spot that instantly.
Absolutely. So what you're talking about there, like, I think people will all be familiar with it if they follow people online, and like the idea that you should have to click more or click see more or anything like that to be able to access that label is just absolutely not okay. And yet we have said very clearly that you have to use the hashtag symbol. And the reason for that is because we were actually able to use eyeball tracking technology in our research to see, well, is it more effective? Like, is it more effective if you put a hashtag ad as opposed to just the word ad? And we were able to see by people's responses when they scroll through content on their own phone that yes, it is. The hashtag draws in the eye, and hashtag ad is more effective than other forms of doing it. And we've gone with ad because ad is just nice and clear. We found that there's a whole variety of hashtags in use out there, like hashtag brand ambassador, hashtag collaboration, and it's still fine to use those, but you have to lead now with hashtag ad or hashtag Fogra if it's in Irish. So it's just to give absolute clarity for the consumer, because what you find with some of those other hashtags, and particularly ones that are shortened like hashtag BA, like, not everybody knows what that means. The eye doesn't necessarily pick up on it as you scroll down quickly on your feed, you know? So what you want is something that's just really, like, there's no ambiguity at all about it.
What happens if a person or an influencer doesn't use the hashtag ads? Are they open to investigation, or is it just kind of, you have a moral responsibility to follow these guidelines?
Oh, no, it's a legal responsibility. It's very definitely a legal responsibility. Like, influencers are traders. They are subject to the Consumer Protection Act 2007, and that says that you can't mislead consumers, and that's really what's at the heart of this guidance. So what this guidance is about is about bringing the law to life in a very real and practical way so that you can put it into practice. But there is very much a law behind it, and enforcement action up to prosecution can be taken against influencers who don't comply.
Right, and finally then, you mentioned own brands, and if you have somebody who have started their own business and they want to talk about a product that they have developed themselves, they might say, well, there's a bit of a loophole here, I don't have to follow that because I'm not promoting somebody else's brand. But under the new guidance, if it's their own product, they still have to use the hashtag ad and let people know that they're promoting it.
They do, because this is actually an area where it is very easy for consumers to be confused. And it's also very easy for people to potentially not realise their own responsibilities, because maybe you have somebody who's developed a particular media profile and an influencer profile off the back of a past career, and then they decide to expand their offering. Like, maybe they decide to set up their own company and sell a particular product. But that product may not necessarily have their name on it. And people who aren't that familiar with their work may not be aware that it's actually their own company. So it's really important. You cannot assume that the people who are seeing your feed on social media happen to know what companies you're involved in or which are your own brands. You have to say that it is an ad if you're promoting it, that you do benefit from it, and you can use the description own brand then to give further clarity.
Okay, if anybody is an influencer listening into us this afternoon and they want to find out more information, Grainne, where can they read the whole guidelines and guidance?
Everything is available on our website, that's ccpc.ie, and they're also available on the website of the ASAI.
Okay, good stuff. New guidance on social media advertising for influencers that has been brought forward by the CCPC and the ASAI. Thanks so much to Grainne Griffin, Director of Communications, for joining us on the show. I just want to get to a couple of other stories that are emerging today and breaking news this afternoon. 12,827 people are registered as homeless here in Ireland. Last month, there were 12,691, so that's an increase of just over 120 or thereabouts living in emergency accommodation. And no doubt we'll have a breakdown of the Kildare figures on our news bulletins here on KFM. Just going then, I'm reading from the RTE website now, an article here, male DNA profiles extracted from under school teacher Ashling Murphy's fingernails match samples generated from the man accused of her murder. The Central Criminal Court has heard this. Dr. Lorna Flanagan from the Forensic Science Lab said the chance of the male DNA profile found under Miss Murphy's nails coming from someone unrelated to Joseph Pushka was 1 in 14,000. Mr. Pushka has pleaded not guilty to murdering 23-year-old Miss Murphy on the 12th of January January last year, and that trial continues.
Kildare Focus with Owen Beatty. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines again. David Moore is on the line from Astronomy Ireland. Good afternoon to you, David.
Good afternoon.
I understand, David, the next lunar eclipse of this year is going to be a partial lunar eclipse taking place tomorrow night. Is that right?
That's right, yes. We want everybody in the country to get out and witness this natural spectacle free of charge overhead. About 8:30 till 10 o'clock.
Right, tell us why this is happening and what we can expect.
Well, we now know that eclipses simply are caused by the moon going through the Earth's shadow. So tomorrow we have the sun, the Earth and the moon lined up perfectly. And the Earth's shadow is always there in space, but there's nothing for it to fall on, so we don't see it until the moon goes through it, and it's like a canvas. And this time it won't go through the middle of the shadow, so we won't get a total eclipse of the moon. We'll get a partial eclipse. So if you're watching, even from 8 o'clock on, you'll see the lower edge of the moon starts to dim a bit, and then a bite will be taken out. The exact time is 8:35 p.m. And that lasts about 80 minutes until nearly 10 o'clock, 9:53. The exact times are on our website, astronomy.ie, along with where to send your photos. So hopefully, you know, even if the skies are a bit cloudy, all you need is a break in the clouds to see the full moon with a bite taken out of it. A really unique experience. It will happen again next year, but it's not as good.
It's going to be visible over parts of Europe, Asia, Australia, Africa, North America, Northeast, South America, the Pacific, the Atlantic, the Indian Ocean, the Arctic and the Antarctic. And more importantly, it'll be visible over County Kildare as well. David, you can see it with your naked eye. I always ask this to you when you come on, that you don't need to have a €1,000 telescope in your front room.
Exactly. This is the great thing. All the 7 million people on this island that we want to publish their photographs of can see it with the naked eye. And most of those people have got a camera phone. And you can actually record the eclipse as well. So you'll get a very small moon with a camera phone, but with a bite taken out of it. So take lots of pictures, but only send your best one into Astronomy Ireland magazine, because we want to record this for posterity. We've been recording eclipses for 30 years now. Our magazine gets archived in the National Library of Ireland, so your picture will end up there for all time. And when you're looking at it, both with the naked eye and probably with your camera phone, you see a brilliant star, in quotes, just to the lower left of the moon. That's actually the planet Jupiter. And once the moon is restored to a full moon, extremely bright, after 10 o'clock, the moon will actually get closer and closer to Jupiter if you want to stay up till after midnight and watch that spectacle as well.
Okay, and David, can I just ask you from a scientific point of view then, how do you know that this is going to happen, that the eclipse is going to happen? And, you know, where do you get notification of it?
Well, the great thing is that gravity is a nice, easy force to predict with computers. So we can model the Earth going around the Sun, the Moon going around the Earth, going back thousands of years. I mean, we know why Jesus Christ was born on a Tuesday evening, 15th of September, in the year 7 BC, because of eclipses that happened at the time. We can date them even thousands of years ago to within minutes. The weather, for instance, another scientific phenomenon, is not as easy to predict. It's what's called a chaotic system. But fortunately, gravity works really nicely, and we can predict the eclipse near a second now, next year in September, that's going to happen, and all the ones coming up in our lifetime with great accuracy. We even have eclipses of the sun. There's one in April next year. We're planning a trip to the Americas for that, to see a total eclipse of the sun, because you won't see one of those from Ireland till 2090. So eclipses are really easy to predict thanks to gravity. It goes back to Sir Isaac Newton back, 400 years ago when he developed his law of gravity.
Great stuff. So 8:35 tomorrow night up until around 9:53 tomorrow night, you should be able to see that eclipse. And remind us again, if people take a photograph of it and they want to send it in to Astronomy Ireland, how do they do that?
Very simple. Go to our website, astronomy.ie. You'll get those times in writing then, so you can't forget them. And it'll tell you exactly where to send your pictures, a little diagram of the eclipse as well. So astronomy.ie. Join the club to get the magazine as well. It's aimed at the general public. Thousands of people get it all around the country. And if you want a sound bite, The time is roughly 8:30 till 10 o'clock.
Perfect. All right. Thanks indeed. That's David Moore from Astronomy Ireland. Looking forward to going out and having a look at that tomorrow night. Might take a photograph and send it in as well. So that eclipse happening between about 8:30 and 10 o'clock, as David said. Just going back to one of the breaking news stories that we told you there today, 12,827 people are registered as homeless in Ireland. Last month, as we said, there were 12,691. We can get more on this now with our reporter Eamon Torsney, who has more information for us.
3,904 children are growing up in B&Bs and hotels, according to the figures from the Department of Housing. The figure for September is an increase of 136 on August's total, while it's 16% higher than the number of people registered as homeless in September 2022. The issue is most acute in the capital, with 9,391 people in emergency accommodation, including more than 2,966 children. The figures from the Department of Housing do not include rough sleepers, women in refuge centres, refugees or asylum seekers, or the so-called hidden homeless.
Thanks for that, Eamon Torsney, reporting. You mentioned there asylum seekers and refugees. Well, the Department of Integration is considering exemptions to allow Ukrainian refugees to travel over the Christmas period. Earlier this month, the department tightened its absence policy so that refugees could no longer leave their state-provided accommodation unless in exceptional circumstances. This was done due to the significant pressure on available accommodation. Prior to these changes, refugees could only leave their accommodation for a maximum of 7 days. Under the new protocol introduced on the 7th of October, this was reduced to zero. However, the department has confirmed that it is considering exemptions for the Christmas period. These will likely be communicated within the next 2 weeks. So because of pressures, they were essentially saying if refugees left the accommodation for a couple of nights, then, you know, they can't get back into that same accommodation because of the pressures that they're under and they would need to be used up. But it seems as though that could be relaxed over the Christmas period. Certainly more to follow, so we'll have to watch this space. Well, the 29th of October, this coming Sunday, is World Psoriasis Day, and approximately 73,000 people in Ireland are affected by psoriasis. Well, to talk more on this, I'm joined by Dr. Cathal O'Connor, Clinical Research Fellow in Paediatric Dermatology in the South Infirmary Victoria University Hospital in Cork, and also at UCC as well. Cathal, thanks for joining us. Good to speak to you on Kildare Focus this afternoon. First of all, let's start off at the very beginning and with the most basic question. What is psoriasis and how does it present in people?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I suppose a few decades ago, we thought that psoriasis was predominantly a skin condition, but with kind of recent research and advances, we now are more aware that it's a kind of a disease of the immune system rather than just the skin. So there is inflammation in the body with psoriasis, where, you know, what you see on the skin is more kind of a reflection of what's going on with the immune system rather than being actually a primary skin disorder. So, there's raised inflammation in the blood. People with psoriasis can get joint involvement and they can have other problems with their heart and liver and other organs. So it's important that people realize that it's not just a skin condition.
Yeah, so how does it actually develop then? Is it brought on by anything or is it just kind of random?
Yeah, so the cause of psoriasis is a bit complex. It's a combination of genetic factors, and again, the genetics are also complex. It's not kind of a 50-50 chance or a 25% chance. Some people don't have any relatives who have psoriasis and the patient has very bad psoriasis, and other people have a very, very strong family history of it and they never get it. So it's a complex combination between genetics and the environment. In terms of the environmental triggers, there are certain things that are known to bring on flares of psoriasis. So stress is a major one. Infections can also cause flares, and then other flares might be things like alcohol, kind of some problems like, sedentary behaviour can also increase the risk of having psoriasis in the long term as well.
Yeah, and in terms of where it affects people in the body then, can that differ? Or I know from talking to people who have had it and here on the programme as well, the scalp, maybe the knees, the elbows, around where the joints are, is that where it's more common?
Yeah, so there do tend to be some typical places that psoriasis affects. The scalp is a very common site, as you mentioned. It's usually the outside of the arms and the shins, so kind of the front, you know, what are called the extensor surfaces of the limbs, whereas eczema is usually more the flexor, which is kind of the, you know, the fronts of the arms and the backs of the legs. There are some other kind of special sites which are typically you know, involved with psoriasis, such as the belly button, the top of the bum, kind of at the bottom of the back, and ear involvement actually can be very problematic as well. Some people can find that they get very thick scale in their ears. It can even cause hearing problems.
Right. You actually mentioned a very interesting point that I didn't think of there, which is the difference between psoriasis and eczema. And they can easily be confused with each other.
I suppose to a dermatologist, they look very, very different, and we would never really mix up the two. But I suppose when people just see a widespread rash and they have no medical training, it can be, you know, easy to just not be able to distinguish between the two. Thankfully, if you have one, you tend not to have the other. They kind of affect different limbs of the immune system or different parts of the immune system. So usually patients who have bad eczema won't ever get psoriasis or vice versa. So at least that's one thing. If you have one of the conditions, you're unlikely to get the other.
How can it be treated then? Is there a cream? Does it go away, or is it a case of just managing it?
Yeah, so for psoriasis, it's much less likely to go away in the long term by itself. And the level of treatment that would be required will depend really on the severity. So for mild eczema, moisturising can help. It can just reduce some of the scale, but it won't really affect the kind of underlying disease process. So the next line of treatment then would be kind of anti-inflammatory treatment. So we have some vitamin D-like creams. We have some topical steroid creams, and we have some other anti-inflammatory creams. If it's a little bit extensive, so usually we kind of use 10% of the body being involved as a kind of a cutoff. We move to things like phototherapy, which is prescribed by dermatologists. And beyond that, then we have specific kind of tablets and injections that can really, really effectively treat bad psoriasis as well.
Okay, and just finally then, because there's a couple of messages actually coming in to us on 0833 97 97 97 from people saying that they have psoriasis and how it impacts their day-to-day life and what flare-ups look like. But they say one thing that they found difficult was the actual maybe physical side of things and how it made them feel mentally, because a lot of people might be ashamed of it or feel embarrassed when they go out and, you know, they have psoriasis on their arms, their legs or whatever. Do you find that from some people that you would treat?
Definitely, that's a huge problem. So the actual skin signs of psoriasis aren't kind of damaging in and of themselves to health, but obviously they're, you know, people find them very stigmatizing. People feel a lot of shame, embarrassment, you know, about their skin psoriasis. But as I said, the good news is that the actual skin psoriasis isn't, you know, a medical problem so much. It's more that the involvement of the inflammation in general can be a problem, but definitely it's a huge, huge problem, the kind of psychological consequences of having psoriasis. And really, with the excellent treatments that we have these days, we shouldn't have anyone, you know, with very bad psoriasis in Ireland anymore.
And what steps would you give to people who are maybe starting out on this journey? They're not sure what to do if they've noticed a change in the skin or aches and pains, if you mentioned. What would you say to them?
Yes, the Irish Skin Foundation has some very good guidance on their website. They have a special booklet on psoriasis. And they have some other resources that are very, very helpful to you. They actually have a Ask the Nurse helpline, which is very helpful as well. There's a nurse who has dermatology training, you know, who's available to chat, and they can direct people accordingly. For, you know, the initial management, it's definitely a good idea to link in with the GP. And then if it's kind of persistent or for moderately severe or severe disease, really, patients should be referred on to a dermatologist for consideration of these advanced therapies that I was mentioning.
Okay, well, listen, thanks so much for joining us on the show this afternoon. Dr. Cathal O'Connor, Clinical Research Fellow in Paediatric Dermatology at the South Infirmary Victoria University Hospital in Cork, and also at UCC as well. 29th of October, World Psoriasis Day 2023. As we've said, affects around 73,000 people here in Ireland, and you can get more information on the Irish Skin Foundation's website, www.irishskin.ie. Now, Éireann Rudd Air Éireann has appealed for all road users, including pedestrians and cyclists, to act safely at level crossings, with latest figures showing that there have been 71 incidents at crossings so far this year. Well, to talk more about this, Jane Cregan from Éireannrud Éireann is with us on the line. Jane, good afternoon and good to speak to you again.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thanks. You're saying that 30 of these incidents resulted in injury to the person attempting to cross.
No, either injury to the person or damage to a vehicle or damage to the crossing itself.
Right, okay. So tell us more then about these figures.
So I suppose, you know, it's a very worrying trend that we see that we have a high level of instances of people, I think, taking risks at level crossings. You can see from the footage that we released yesterday, people doing really unsafe manoeuvres at level crossings. And the reason that we put that out was it's part of European Health and Safety Week, that we are appealing to members of the public to use level crossings safely. And indeed, even yesterday, we had an incident at a level crossing in Sandymount with the cement truck. So, you know, despite our best efforts to try and inform and educate people about the dangers of not acting safely in level crossings, people still persist to act in an unsafe manner.
Right. How many level crossings then do we have around the country, and where are they more common?
We have over 900 level crossings around the country. Now, we have various different types of level crossings. So there are automatic barrier CCTV level crossings, which are controlled from level crossing control centres. There's one in Athlone, there's one in Mallow, and then there's one in Central Traffic Control in Dublin. Then we have level crossings that would be manned with a gatekeeper opening and closing the gates. And then finally, we have what's known as user-operated level crossings. These would be crossings that would be unattended, and the person who is using, the road user who is crossing, it is their responsibility to open and close the gates safely when using the crossing. Now, the majority of those are in the west and the south of the country. A lot of them would be, you know, in very minor roads and also farm-to-farm accommodation crossings.
Okay, and it is an offence to go through a level crossing when the barriers are down or going down, is that right?
It is. It is an offence under the rules of the road. You must, if a level crossing barrier is being lowered, if the lights are flashing or the bells are sounding, you must bring your vehicle or your cycle to a stop at that level crossing to permit the train to cross.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the reasons that people might give as to why they're going through.
The main is time. People are short on time. They want to take that risk to get through, because obviously if there is, the level crossing is going down, it will be closed for a number of minutes while the train passes. And people, I understand, are under pressure for time. But I suppose sometimes you can have too much haste, and it can result in very tragic instances. So, you know, we'd be appealing to everybody, if level crossing gates are starting to lower or the bells and lights are flashing and sounding, you know, don't take a risk. You have to wait. They're the rules of the road.
And do you have a breakdown of the most frequent locations involved in incidents?
Yeah, it's interesting that the majority of these locations are urban locations in the Greater Dublin area. So Sutton Level Crossing has the greatest amount of instances this year to date, with 13. The level crossings in the Sandymount area, Serpentine and Merrion Gates and Lansdowne, they all feature in the top 10 as well, as does Bray in Wicklow, and a number of crossings on the Maynooth line are also impacted by being, you know, very, very frequently struck.
Okay, and then just finally, I know that you're trying to reduce the number of incidents, but also you've closed 93 crossings since 2014. Are you seeking maybe to close more down?
Yeah, so we have a network-wide risk analysis done of level crossings. Obviously, anywhere where you have road and rail interface, there is a risk, you know, to safety. Now, I'm not saying that these level crossings aren't safe. They are safe, but there is a risk associated with them. So, you know, throughout the last number of decades, we've been dramatically reducing the number of level crossings that are in place across the network. And we continue to look at level crossing elimination. Program is ongoing. You'll see that we have applied to Mbord Pleanála for the eradication of 7 level crossings on the Dublin Cork main line. And I suppose there's two reasons for that. One is safety, and also we have to operate at a reduced speed in the vicinity of level crossings, so it would also contribute to reducing journey time.
Okay, very important discussion on the programme this afternoon. Thanks to Jane Cregan, Éireannrud Éireann spokesperson, for joining us. So just a reminder, appealing for safety, 71 incidents at level crossings recorded so far this year. 30 of those incidents resulted in injury to the person attempting to cross or damage to the crossing itself. And thanks again, Jane, for joining us. Just before we finish up as well, I want to remind you of a couple of bits and pieces. As the clocks go back, talking about road safety, clocks going back an hour this bank holiday weekend, Kildare County Council is appealing to pedestrians to be more visible to others while using the road. Analysis released from the Road Safety Authority reports that 43 pedestrians were killed on Irish roads in 2022. Initial figures from An Garda Síochána show that there have been 38 pedestrian deaths on Irish roads so far this year. Kildare County Council's Road Safety Officer Declan Keogh said wearing a high-vis vest not only greatly increases your visibility, but it's also a lifesaver. With the limited daylight hours from November, we all need to ensure that we're making ourselves as safe and as visible as possible. And a simple thing is a high-vis. That could be the ideal solution, said Declan Keogh. Also want to say well done to Castle Mitchell GAA and Suncroft GAA, because if you were tuned into us yesterday, they were awarded €25,000 each from the Healthy Ireland GAA Walking Tracks Initiative. The news was confirmed yesterday by Minister for Public Health, Wellbeing and the National Drug Strategy, Hildegard Nocton. And that announcement follows earlier allocations awarded in April to improve walking track facilities at Two Mile House and Rathcoffey GAA clubs, respectively. They received €15,000 and €10,000. So some good news there for Castle Mitchell GAA and Suncroft GAA. That's it from me on the programme. Thanks for your company over the last hour or so.